We saw this trend in 2020 that we felt would play out, which is artificial intelligence would have a big impact on how content is created and consumed. And so we started to incubate companies that were building in that space. We've always had the idea that these things come together. And if you look at the Futureverse, it was spawned out of half a dozen companies that were incubated in that process, plus a bunch of others that we acquired to create this kind of machine that can put them together. It's always been the vision, and now we've been able to build the building blocks, see those become successful, and then bring them together as a bigger, more scalable unit.
You have just heard from Aaron McDonald, Chief Executive Officer of Futureverse, a technological and cultural foundation for the open metaverse where creators, companies and communities conjure their future. The Futureverse infrastructure enables companies and creators to deliver the open metaverse experience that they want for their audience. A seamless portal in and out of all apps in the metaverse, Futureverse allows users to travel with a passport, friends, communications, finances and content. So let us dive right in.
Good morning, it's day two at WebEx Asia, and I'm here with Aaron McDonald. Good morning.
Good morning. Good to be here.
How was your first day?
It was good. I got in on Sunday and chilled for a bit and then went down yesterday, explored the exhibition area and took a bunch of meetings and getting ready for this morning's chat, actually, which has just come out of. Talked about the intersection of artificial intelligence and blockchain.
Wonderful. We've been connected for a while. The first connection was still on your previous venture, Centrality AI, and now it's Futureverse.
If you think about Centrality as an early stage incubator, we were focused on a couple of things. One was enabling Web3 to be adopted more widely through improving the user experience. We invested in a whole bunch of companies that were building those protocols to make it simpler to onboard users. And then we started to think about what are the things that bring users in. And that led us to creating companies and investing in companies and incubating companies that were building content. As part of that, we saw this trend in 2020 that we felt would play out, which is artificial intelligence would have a big impact on how content is created and consumed. And so we started to incubate companies that were building in that space. We've always had the idea that these things come together. And if you look at the Futureverse, it was spawned out of half a dozen companies that were incubated in that process, plus a bunch of others that we acquired to create this kind of machine that can put them together. It's always been the vision, and now we've been able to build the building blocks, see those become successful, and then bring them together as a bigger, more scalable unit.
What is the concept behind Futureverse?
Futureverse is doing three things, really simple things. They sound simple, but they're not simple to do. One is build infrastructure that enables that seamless onboarding experience and interoperability for users. So that's things like digital identity, asset interoperability, portable social graphs, all of those kinds of things. And then the next layer is connecting that to tools that enable developers and users to create content. These are AI-powered tools. We have five different areas that our PhD team works on research for, and we build products around so that people can literally type the worlds they imagine into existence. And then we pair that with partnerships with world-leading brands and well-known IP to create those funnels for users around things they already know and love and activate this technology inside of those brands and experiences.
There's quite a lot to unpack. At least, let's say, the first two are things that people have been working on and talking about for a long time in terms of digital identity and then this interoperability of assets, especially in the gaming space, which is sought in Japan. Have you solved it?
I think so. The FuturePass is our digital identity platform, and FuturePass is a really neat piece of technology that enables users to onboard into Web3 and do that with as little as an email address or a phone number. No need to think about private keys and all that kind of stuff. It creates a smart wallet on chain. They don't need to know that's happening. And then we give them breadcrumbs of information and learning through these applications, through these games, that enable them to upgrade their experience to being a full Web3 citizen. We actually launched that today, the Future Quest program, which is a way to engage the community in quests and tasks that help us onboard more people, but also help them learn about what it means to be a Web3 citizen. Everything in interoperability centers around the idea of digital identity, because that's the one thing that is most portable. On top of that, we build tools like our asset register, which links to your identity. And the asset register provides an ontology for assets so that when someone creates one, they can specify in a standardized data format that can be consumed by other applications what it is, what it does, what engines it supports, what poly counts, what devices, all those kinds of things. That provides a data layer that assets can now standardize around and therefore become interoperable. The last bit is the content creation pipelines and tools, building those tools in a way that allows a single piece of content to be created and then put out in multiple formats so that different kinds of devices or engines or experiences can consume that same set of content. But yeah, we think we've solved it.
Yesterday in a conversation, somebody made the argument that I actually want multiple identities because I've got my business and my personal. Yeah. I have an anchor and then I have certain things that are exposed in specific environments.
Yeah, we think that's the same thing. It's how the world operates today. You go to work and you're one person. You might be a different person with your family. You might be a different person when you're playing a game online or when you're on Instagram. The idea of a singular identity, I think, is a flawed one. We created within the Future Pass system a way to have multiple identities but have delegations and permissions work between them so that you only have to manage one core key to the universe, but you can have lots of different sub-personas that can interact with the applications.
And usability is always the thing.
Take something like a FIFA AI League mobile game. You go into the App Store, you log in and create an account just like you would for any other mobile game. And you're already got a Future Pass, whether you know it or not. And there's hundreds of thousands of downloads that have gone through that process and are creating these Web3 accounts without really knowing that's what's happening. That's how it should be. If you can make the technology invisible, you've done your job. And it's a thing that Web3 has done super poorly. They shove the technology in your face. They talk about protocols and standards and data formats and all this kind of stuff. What we need to do more of is create really exciting experiences for people to engage with and then teach them in fun ways about what those things are.
If I was your client, it can have a choice in terms of using the whole stack or three components or just going with one as needed?
Yeah, totally. The one thing that binds them all together is Future Pass, so that's an important one to pick up. But outside of that, pretty much anything is a la carte.
Who are your partners at the moment?
We've announced some of them. We've got lots of them. Like I mentioned earlier, one of the ones that is announced is FIFA. So we built one of the first games with FIFA outside of the EA relationship. The FIFA AI League is a mobile game where the user controls a team of AI agents. And each one of the players is its own AI. They compete against another team and you become the team manager training your AI. We announced our partnership with Authentic Brands Group, which is one of the largest IP rights holders in the world. They have a huge number of well-known brands and personalities on their books. Our first collaboration with them is with the Muhammad Ali Estate. We're building the next legends with Muhammad Ali. Those are a couple examples of some of our global partners. If you go and check online, you'll see a whole bunch more across music and entertainment and culture and all the areas that are important to bringing people into this space.
So brands are all into Web3?
It's a misnomer that Web3 is dead in that space or that NFTs are dead. We're talking to global brands, powerhouses in content and fashion and gaming and even in sports and other non-entertainment related industries every day about what they want to do in this space. One of the good things about the hype going away is you can get down to business and do the real work. And I think everyone out there appreciates and understands now that the future of value on the internet is anchored in this technology, that things like open identity and those kinds of things are the future of interoperability, and they get that intrinsically. They're being cautious about how they megaphone that because different trends are things that create shareholder interest and value, but it doesn't mean they've stopped doing it.
When do you see this being driven in the corporates? Is that a marketing department or where does it sit typically?
It's a mix. Usually it will come from a commercial side of the business. Some of the engagements start in the technology and IT side of the business, but predominantly I'd say in the commercial side of the business. They're looking for new ways to monetize their IP, or they're thinking about future-proofing their existing revenue streams as the market changes. And yeah, they're definitely commercially driven decisions in the most part.
which I would see as a positive,
really positive
sign, right? Because
yeah.
it's not somebody experimenting with a yeah. small part of a marketing business,
no.
but it is really then seen as a future core competency
yeah,
that
gone
needs
from,
to be addressed.
It's gone from how can we attach a tag to our brand position to how can we build something that generates revenue.
We should be renaming NFTs, whatever we're going to call it, digital collectibles. Do you see the conversation moving beyond this initial use case of NFTs and into these metaverse future
yeah.
means, the digital environment?
Yeah, calling it NFTs is one of the worst things the industry could have done, just like every other thing they've called out. They've just been focused on the technical wizardry that they've invented, that they've forgot about the fact that people don't give a shit. Think about email. If we called it what it is under the skin, people would be freaked out by that. Imagine we have conferences about POP3 or whatever it is. Like, it would just be stupid in any other part of the world or technology landscape to do that. And so moving the lexicon towards things that everyday people can identify as a big part of adoption. And so that's why Future Pass is Future Pass. It's not a wallet. It's your passport to the metaverse. Collectibles is a really good term for interoperable content because that's something people have always known. The fact that it uses a standard that makes it interoperable is cool, but people don't need to know that. They need to know what it does and what's different about it and how their product experience has changed. Much more language focused on helping break those barriers down for people and make it less confronting.
Yeah. You're talking to an old guy, so I still
yeah.
remember setting up POP3.
Yeah, I was an engineer back in the day when we were building dial-up networks. That's how far back I go. The thing you had to know how to do, and then eventually you didn't. It just became a natural part of being online, and you didn't have, the friction was very low.
Let me go back once more to the identity, because yeah. it's such a central piece, obviously. Given that so many teams are working on
yeah.
solutions, and ideally it will be open,
yeah.
maybe you have multiple core anchor IDs
yeah.
and then the flavors that we discussed on top of that. Is it going to be really open, or is it like the early days of the messaging standards before we had TCP/IP, where you have
yeah.
different environments, or the internet today where you've got the US version, the China version, and everything in between?
For it to be successful, it has to be open. Like a lot of the stuff that we're building, they have to be open protocols. We're definitely in protocol wars on a bunch of this stuff, whether it's asset standards or identity standards or data standards, and that will take its path like it always does, and we'll end up with more universal standards or interoperable standards. Even though there are walled gardens within the internet today, they still work on TCP/IP, all of them. When I was back as an engineer, we had dozens, literally dozens of protocols to get from point A to point B. And you had to know as an engineer how to program MUX that could translate between those things, or a router that could translate between those things. Cisco exists because of this problem. We're in those standard wars now. There's a lot of good work happening in standards bodies to try and shape this up. For now, the principle is build open and build with interoperability in mind, and eventually there'll be some kind of standards convergence that you can get on board. But core thing is approach it from an open way, so that when the standards evolve, users have the ability to take their data and import that to the new standard.
As an entrepreneur, you need to follow what the bodies are doing and not deviate too far from it.
We try and not only follow it, but participate in those forums and help shape. New Zealand, for example, we founded Digital Identity New Zealand. We helped the government put together the Digital Identity Trust Framework. We participated as New Zealand representatives in the international forums on identity standards. Across the board, it's important not just to follow it, but be active and try and drive it.
The asset interoperability. Gaming is always the example that,
yeah.
that people use, so I stick with that. If I have my Dragon Slayer, my sword
yeah.
that I want to take from one game into
yeah.
the next, that might be also a completely different platform in terms of
yeah.
the fidelity. Somehow that needs to be managed.
Yeah.
First of all, I need to be able to take it over, and then if I obtained it in a desktop environment with a huge
mm-hmm.
graphic card and then I move to a mobile, then probably the resolution isn't quite the same. How do you manage all that metadata around it?
That's what the asset registry does. Its job is to manage the data about an asset and where the different file formats are stored and what they are. It's a sword, for example, or it's a chair. What can you do with a chair? You can sit on chairs. So applications know what things are and where to retrieve the right file format for their experience. In the short term, the approach we've taken is build pipelines that can generate assets in multiple formats so that you can call the specific format that will work for your application. In the long term, we should be able to generate those on the fly. So we're getting better and more efficient at doing the 3D gen in real time. The end state for this stuff is that you'll just have data and the actual object will be rendered on the edge in real time, depending on what that device or experience is. And even the idea of that, people imagine the interoperability in the metaverse is mostly about the content stuff, but it's not. It's mostly about the data stuff. Because if you think about it, you've spent 10 years developing the IP around Harry Potter. It's this whole world. There are languages, there are aesthetics, there are character narratives, all these things that have been carefully curated. I'm not going to bring my AK-47 into Harry Potter world. That doesn't make sense. But what I will bring is my identity, my social graph, maybe some information about the assets I hold that could be relevant in that world. Maybe it's not an AK-47 anymore, it's a wand. So the idea of interoperability is much more anchored in the idea of data than it is of content.
How are you dealing with the current owners of these digital assets, which are within the walled garden of a certain game? And that is ultimately the moneymaker for these companies. Are they open to at least experiment with it, kind of the incumbents, the legacy gamer?
Yeah, definitely.
Where do they then get the revenue from if you can migrate your data from one game to the next?
Eventually, if you believe the thesis of Web3, companies are going to have to compete on providing the best community outcomes and best user experience because the data can't be trapped in walled gardens. And if you ask the consumer, what's your preference for openness or closeness, they'll say openness. They want to be the owner of their own destiny, and it's a much more important thing as the world becomes more digital to own that digital you. If you're not the kind of business that embraces that and figures out how to create the best community outcomes and the best user experience, you're not going to be in business. That's the long-term thesis. If you back yourself, there's more money to be made from openness because more interoperability increases the value of your content, because if I can use it more, I can interact with it more, then it becomes more valuable to me. So the smart ones will see that commercial opportunity. And then there's kind of marketplace effects as well, like more people being able to interact with content is more liquidity, and more liquidity equals more potential value to be realized.
Yeah, I understand that the short-term, long-term view, it's very hard to foresee for me how this curve might look like. It could well be something like we've seen in music, that it goes down substantially and then it's been climbing up to all-time highs again, but it took 20 years.
You've got to remember, though, that one thing is going to fundamentally change, and that is that it used to cost tens to hundreds of millions of dollars to produce world-class, exciting, playable experience. It's going to cost next to nothing. If your walled garden is having capital and creating great experiences that people are like, okay, this is the best experience, and it's the best experience because we've got the most capital to make it, that's gone. So what's next?
It's the classic case of pushing innovation and innovation capability out to the edge. The center is removed. And it's got a bit more complicated than two people in the garage these days. But anybody in the garage can do a new blockchain and they can create a new game or a new metaverse experience. And you don't need the 300 developers for 5 years to
build. We talk with the execs at some of these big gaming companies. They realize that. They see that's coming.
And the last part was the social graph. And I did not jump on the bandwagon of Threads, but they wanted to make a portable social graph
It did seem like that, yeah. I wouldn't write them off. Threads went up and down. But if there's one thing that's true, Zuck can get his machine behind stuff. If he wants stuff to happen, he's been pretty good at doing it. I definitely wouldn't discount that idea. It was a really interesting move from them to go down that path. And I think it's because they can see that this is where the world is going and they need to figure out how to be a player in that world. I genuinely believe that's what's driving the strategy. We can't do that in Facebook because our shareholders will freak out. Mm. They'll see that's where our current business and revenues and all those kinds of things. Let's try Threads over here and see if we can make this stuff work and transition. It feels like that kind of move. Just speculation, but that's what it feels like. That's what I'd be doing in his shoes.
There's some real appreciation for this owner entrepreneur who's still controlling this massive organization that Facebook or Meta is, and making such a bold move because he can.
Yeah.
That seems to resonate really well with the tech founding community.
Yeah, it does. If you look at across most of the big tech companies, they have leaders like that can make bold choices, take the risks and move the organization behind them. And it's just, to a certain extent, if you don't have that capability as a entrepreneur, you're eventually going to get swallowed up by your own corporate machine, because you'll get this decision paralysis that happens in corporates, and the ability to continue to innovate, it gets less and less the bigger you are. So the way to solve that is for big companies to have the ability to make these changes, just like Musk is doing with Twitter.
Yeah, I find it remarkable because that's the second transformation. They almost missed the mobile boat and they caught up on that. And it's all Zuckerberg. If that is the second transformation, will be the third coming of something Facebooky.
Yeah.
Other organizations like Microsoft had to change leaders. The organization could handle it in the end, but they needed a different leader. And here it's all in one person that over such a long time. For me, it's remarkable.
No, it's fascinating, and I didn't really appreciate it until I was at a small conference held by Airtree, which is one of our investors, and they brought along a woman, Molly Graham, who was an early exec in Facebook and worked alongside Zuckerberg during the course of that growth. She shared a bunch of insights about why she felt Facebook was successful, and one of the things was that Zuck knows how to turn the organization on a dime and chase something and be ruthless about it.
So what's your perspective then on X these days?
I think it was inevitable that Musk would try and do this, and the WeChat of the West, let's say. He's had a history of being a good executor that gets what he wants. I would think that they'll come up with something that's interesting and engaging, and they've got the reach and the capital and the capability to make it happen. So it'd be really interesting to watch how that plays out.
So payments come in next or next?
I think, look at his background, right? You've got to imagine that payments will come. If I was a betting man, I would say there's definitely going to be a Web3 element to that.
Appreciate those comments. It's nice color. Come back to Futureverse. What does the future look like for Futureverse? Is your next steps, since you already have global brands, so maybe geographic reach isn't the challenge, is just getting the next adoption wave onto your platform?
Yeah, we have people in 16 countries now and brands with global reach. We've been building for a long time now. It's hard stuff to get, and we've gone through a couple of iterations along the way to figure out how it all works together, and now we're in demonstrate, accelerate, onboard mode. That's our mission for the next 12 to 18 months, is get this into the hands of people, get these brand activations out in the public domain, and start to grow the community and show how it can all work together.
It's not quite a marketplace, but the balance is similar. You need the brands on there for once. They drive adoption, but then the adoption drives additional brands. So you need to play both sides of it.
Yeah, I think it's like traditional platform growth strategy. You can apply this to Microsoft Cloud or Apple iOS App Store or Amazon's cloud computing infrastructure. The model is the same, which is build your stuff, create activations on top of that yourself with your own content or value proposition to create the first use cases. Show that to brand partners who can bring some gravity to that thing. Oh, it's real, it works. This isn't just a PowerPoint anymore. Add them to the mix. They create more gravity of users and content and things to do. And then the next stage is the wider developer market. They see brands, they see users, they see working shit. There's an economy there that's worth building into, and we're not going to change the recipe. We're following that path.
The end user, will it be more developer? Or because we also talked about the content creation part, how technically savvy do I need to be at the end to make maximum use of your capabilities?
It's one of those glide paths things. So stage one, we use it internally to make us more efficient. Stage two, we start to onboard those partners and developers who are a little bit more technically savvy. In that phase where you're working out the kinks, improving the documentation, improving the UX, all that kind of stuff. And then third stage is users just interact with it like they do with any other consumer application. And there'll probably be three flavors, and you know, from our side in terms of consumers. We'll have that enterprise market where we're co-building things with them. There'll be the developer market where they're taking our tools and building their own experiences, and then there'll be users who are building their own experiences or participating in one of those two other experiences that have been built by brands or by developers.
Yeah. It will be an interesting next 12 to 18 months to follow.
Yeah, very much so.
Wonderful. Thank you very much, Aaron.
Thank you.
Looking forward to people following the path, and then maybe next year, RapX, we'll see you again here.
Yeah, totally. Thank you. Cheers.
Thanks a lot.